Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in this Friday night. We have just a whole rash of things that are going to sound extremely disconnected for you on the program tonight. And I want to start right away. You remember a couple of weeks ago we talked about former governor Don Siegelman from Alabama, who had been jailed by the Bush crime family in order to move a prominent Democrat like Siegelman out of the way. We had his daughter on and talked about it. Siegelman, of course, has been released. An appeals court has released him while he files his appeal, and he has or will be testifying before Congress about what happened to him. The outlet that broke the story and really went to town on it was rawstory.com and their managing editor, Larissa Alexandrovna. And we've asked her to be on the program tonight because there is another program very similar, or another situation very similar to this, that involves not a Democrat, but a man who is a Republican. Larissa, hi, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
I'm going to do a real quick synopsis here. This is based on what you have written. You wrote a couple of weeks ago. Larissa conducted an interview, exclusive interview, with a former Mississippi Republican state legislator who was later backed by Democrats and wound up with a seat on the Mississippi Supreme Court. His name is Oliver Diaz Jr., and he was indicted in 2003 on charges relating to his receipt of a loan guarantee from a trial lawyer, Paul Miner, personal friend and the largest Democratic donor in Mississippi, to help defray campaign debts. A Bush-appointed U.S. attorney in Mississippi, Danica Lampton, brought charges of bribery against Diaz, Miner, and two other Mississippi judges. Diaz was acquitted of all those charges, and a jury acquitted Miner of the charges related to Diaz, but was unable to reach a verdict on some other charges. So within days of his acquittal, Diaz was indicted a second time, and he was again acquitted. Prior to being appointed to the judiciary, Diaz served in the Mississippi House of Representatives as a Republican for 7 years. He was elected to the Mississippi Court of Appeals in 1994, and in 2000 he was appointed to the state Supreme Court by then-Democratic Governor Ronnie Musgrove. What emerges in the interview that Larissa conducted are allegations of even more aggressive prosecutorial tactics and intimidation than was previously reported about the story. And, of course, the allegations seem to fit the pattern of the prosecution in Alabama, where another Bush-appointed U.S. attorney successfully prosecuted Don Siegelman for bribery. And as in Alabama, Diaz was indicted a second time after the first set of charges failed to hold up in court. He was ultimately acquitted and still retains the state Supreme Court seat. Now, he tells Raw Story, quote, after I was indicted, before my trial, my home was broken into, our door was kicked in, our documents were rummaged, televisions, computers, and other valuables were not taken, despite the fact that we were out of town for several days and the home was left open by the so-called burglars. We could not figure out a motive for the burglary and reported to the Biloxi Police Department. The crime was never solved. And as Larissa previously reported in the Permanent Republican Majority Part 2 in their investigative series, Governor Siegelman's home was broken into twice during the trial, and his attorney's office was broken into at least once during the process of his case. Now, it goes on. One thing you have to keep in mind, Diaz was seen as being possibly a threat to the Republican governor of Mississippi, Haley Barbour. And, of course, Barbour was the chairman of the Republican National Committee from 1993 to 1997, and barely escaped some indictments himself, because what Barbour did all those years ago was to bring unreported money from the Chinese government into the Republican Party, which helped elect all those Democrats back in 1994. Joining us now, like I said, is Larissa Alexandrovna of RawStory.com. This story is not quite, I don't think, as bizarre as the Don Siegelman story, but what does it indicate to you, Larissa?
Well, it shows a pattern of what appears to be, initially, if you look at the Alabama situation, you have the Republican whistleblower, Dana Jill Simpson, who blows the whistle that Karl Rove was involved in Siegelman's prosecution. Her house is burnt down, and she's run off the road.
Mm-hmm.
As you noted, Governor Siegelman's house was broken into twice, his attorney's office once. And then when you look at Mississippi, you see a very similar pattern one of the judges that was indicted with Judge Diaz, Judge Whitfield, John Whitfield, his office was burned down. You have break-ins again, as you noted, in the Diaz household. So what you, first and foremost, what you see is a very disturbing pattern of crimes that are yet to be solved that appear to be targeting the people who are already targets of these investigations and prosecutions. So that's certainly one big pattern and issue that's going on between the two states.
Were you surprised to learn that these type of terror tactics, police state tactics, could be used against a man who nominally is a Republican?
No, because I've been crawling around the South, the Deep South now for 6 months, investigating several states, and what it's becoming clear to me is that it's not Republicans, your typical Republicans or Democrats. It's a version of Republicans, like the Haley Barbers, the Karl Roves, that's extremely far right, that are targeting people of both parties, Democrats for obvious reasons, but Republicans who will not play ball, who will not fall into line. No, I'm not surprised at all. There's a man who was just indicted in Alabama because he wouldn't play ball. His name is John Goff, a Republican, huge Republican fundraiser, but he wouldn't play ball, and they indicted him recently. So I'm not surprised at all. No.
Now, refresh me on this minor. The man who was also accused in this trial, lawyer Paul Miner.
Right.
Is he in jail now?
Yes.
All right. Now, what was he convicted of?
Well, he was not committing any crime. He was convicted of what they were, Diaz, Miner, and the two other judges were indicted for, was that during the election, Diaz and Miner go way back before one was a judge and whatnot, and the political money apparatus of the Republicans, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, started flooding the state of Mississippi against Diaz in support of his more Republican opponent. And he couldn't compete, so Paul Miner basically signed a loan guarantee, which is not against the law in Mississippi. So there's no crime committed. But they were indicted anyway, and the case that was presented was one of bribery, even though there was no quid pro quo. Diaz was acquitted twice, but the other three, Paul Miner and the other two judges, were tried again and were not acquitted. And Paul Miner now sits in prison in Pensacola, Florida. And the big issue there right now is, and similar to what happened to Don Siegelman, Paul Miner was shackled. This is, he's accused of a white-collar crime. He was shackled and manacled and moved out of state, and his wife is dying of brain cancer, and he's not allowed out to see her. He's not allowed out on bail.
This obviously is pure police state intimidation that is being used against people who would defy whom? Defy these right-wing Republicans like Haley Barbour and Karl Rove and Dick Cheney?
And their corporate allies. I mean, it's really about corporatism versus the people.
Right.
Because Diaz, although before he was a judge as a Republican, he was very bipartisan, and he ruled a lot in favor of the plaintiffs. And Paul Miner's, legendary big tobacco. He took on the big tobacco cases, and so he's made some enemies. And he was a big Democratic fundraiser, so they needed to get him out of the way. It is very disturbing. It is police state tactics, and the fact that the way this is being done is through the U.S. Attorney's Office. And if there's a whole other layer of this, I'm not sure if we have time, but of how corrupt the actual U.S. attorneys are in both Alabama and Mississippi. the fact that they're still in office indicting people.
All right. Given the fact that this Bush organization is in its final months, and given the fact that the Justice Department, I would assume, is going to be expunged of this filth, what are they gaining in putting these people like Siegelman, like Miner, an intimidating Diaz? What have they got to gain knowing that, that they're soon out of office?
Well, what they had to gain at the time this all took place, it all goes back. In Siegelman, it's 2002, and Diaz, it goes back to 2000. They gained seats.
I see.
The governor of Alabama now is Bob Riley, a Republican. Haley Barbour used the Diaz minor indictments to, basically call his opponent, Musgrove, who is a Democrat, basically, using it as a PR, saying, look, this is the kind of people he put up, and Musgrove lost. So what they won was seats, and that's all they really cared about. And more importantly,
In other words, the consolidation of power.
That's right.
All right, let me put you on hold a second, Larissa, because we have to take a break here. We're talking about a story that not too many people are really that aware of, but the further evidence of political intimidation being used against politicians in this country to shut them up.
Faster than a flying monkey, more powerful than a special prosecutor, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
22 past the hour. We're talking with the a managing editor, I believe I've got that right, of rawstory.com, Larissa Alexandrovna. Do I have your title right?
Of investigative news, but it's okay. It's close enough.
Okay. All right. And what we're talking about is yet another example of police state tactics against politicians that... honorable people that fell out of favor with this Bush crime family. How widespread is this tactic that we've heard about now? Little drips and drabs, and of course, mainstream media is not going to report this because it is the corporatist media. But how widespread is this sort of thing? Here's two instances in the South. What about the rest of the country, Larissa?
Well, it's more than two. You've got the four people in Mississippi, the two people in Alabama, you've got a person in Pennsylvania, you've got two people in Florida, one person in Georgia, and those are just the ones I can rattle off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
How widespread is this? I'd say it's incredibly widespread, but what's even more disturbing is these people are fairly high profile, so we know about these cases. What about people who aren't Supreme Court justices or governors? What about, just your basic kind of Joe off the street? Those are the people that I'm really concerned about that we'll likely never know about because they have no access.
You mentioned that Paul Miner's wife has brain cancer, and
right. It's
my understanding that she is in, well, you told me that she's dying of this,
right.
And she's in her final stages. Has Miner now? Miner is in jail again. Why? And why will they not let him be with his wife?
Well, he's out, like Siegelman. He's not out on bail for reasons nobody can figure out.
Right.
He's in jail for he was indicted for something that wasn't a crime.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, guaranteeing a loan for a judge in an election, and that's not a crime in Mississippi. And the proof of that is that the Diaz was acquitted twice.
Mm-hmm.
So they couldn't prove quid pro quo. So then how is one in jail and one?
Well, what Miner was actually convicted of that put him in jail?
Well, they basically convicted him. They couldn't get him on Diaz. So they convicted him of bribing the other two judges, even though, basically the jury deadlocked several times, just like in the Siegelman case. There were two trials. I mean, it's very similar. Ultimately, he's convicted of bribery and corruption. But when you look at it, he was charged under a RICO statute because they really didn't have enough evidence.
How are these convictions obtained by the Bush Justice Department here in the South. How do they manage to get a jury to send someone, these prominent people, who I think your investigation has proven that they're not guilty of what they've been charged with? How do they get the convictions in?
Well, a good example in Mississippi is that the FBI officer investigating the case, the first indictment around by the name of Michael Campbell, he you know, basically was threatening to blow the whistle and was complaining about this. So guess where he is now? He was reassigned to Guantanamo.
Oh, this is the guy who does forensic accounting?
Right. What's he doing at Guantanamo? I don't know.
Right. Oh, my God.
Right? So then the FBI agent, Kevin Rust, who takes over, is you know, has very strong ties to both the U.S. attorney and Diaz's opponent in the 2000 campaign.
Mm-hmm.
He goes and testifies in front of the grand jury. And that's your witness. You're in, sitting in the jury box. Here's an FBI agent. They're telling
right.
you,
right.
you know. In Siegelman's case, it's even worse than that because the jury, there was evidence of jury tampering that one of the jurors brought to the judge's attention, and the judge did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's how they're getting these convictions, is they have their assets.
I want people to learn about these cases the same way I did, which was through your site, rawstory.com. If somebody goes to rawstory.com, will they find all this entire story, all these various chapters? You have five or six chapters on this story, and we're
right.
kind of running out of time here. So it's rawstory.com. That's where people start.
Right, front page. There's a column on the front page that special report that shows the series.
All right, and what do you see as an immediate possible outcome here? Is anything going to change, Larissa, in the next couple of weeks?
Well, I'm hoping that the people will put the same effort they did into helping Don Siegelman, into helping Paul Miner.
Paul Miner, yeah.
Because, his wife is passing away while he's stuck in prison for a crime that isn't a crime. So.
I hear you. Larissa, thank you. We'll talk again. I really appreciate you taking time to be on the program tonight. Thanks a lot. RawStory.com. Check it out. We'll be right back.
Pickles Bush. When Georgie falls asleep, I creep into the Oval Office, sneak a ciggy, and turn on Mike Malloy. Then I reprogram Georgie's speed dial. The simple pleasures.
Yeah? It's that easy, huh, baby? 25 before the hour. Sorry, we had to get out as quickly as we did with Larissa Alexandrovna. You should go to rawstory.com. And take a look at the investigative work that she has done on the on this particular case, and also on the Don Siegelman case, which will soon be on a television near you when Siegelman testifies. I believe it's before the House Judiciary Committee about what happened to him. There is such an undercurrent of the stuff that goes on that you and I, because of the fact that we have to work, we have to pay attention to what we're doing, television news is useless, that we're just not aware of. I think it would be scary, really scary for us if we did have a complete understanding of what's going on. I don't mean to, put on the tinfoil hat here, but here's an example. Hartman was talking about this today, according to Mary, who emailed this to me. Tom Hartman was talking about this today. There's a report from, of all places, 3rd Army Headquarters of the Russian Space Command, located near Moscow. Report today that a nuclear-fueled explosion occurred in the United States near Illinois after the downing of an American B-52 bomber by, it is presumed, other elements of the U.S. Air Force shot it down, operating in that region. The article goes on, so powerful was the explosion reported from this downed American nuclear bomber that Western media sources immediately started reporting the effects of a 5.2 to 5.4 magnitude earthquake in that region, but to which the most accurate description of a nuclear-type blast was reported by the Bloomberg News Service, and who stated in their article, quote, you could hear a roaring sound in the whole, according to the manager of a Super 8 motel in Mount Carmel, Illinois, near the epicenter, you could hear a roaring sound and the whole motel shook, waking up the guests. End quote. The reports further state that this was the second attempt by a U.S. B-52 nuclear bomber to penetrate the North American Command air defense surrounding the dissident United States Scott Air Force Base in Illinois, from which these aircraft seeking to bomb Iranian atomic facilities are based. On Tuesday, April 15th, American citizens in the Indiana region, immediately east of Illinois, reported numerous booms and flashes in their night skies, which some attributed to fireball meteorites crashing in the atmosphere, but which the U.S. Air Force reported was caused by F-16 jet fighters' sonic booms and their use of military flares. These reports, however, state that this April 15th incident turned back the first abortive attempt by dissident American forces to get their nuclear weapons out of that country for their intended use against Iran. The trigger, so-called, to these latest desperate attempts to embroil the world in total war arose from the U.S. Defense Secretary's ordering of a full accounting of all American nuclear weapons on March 28th after the discovery that an unspecified number of them were, quote, missing, end quote. Now, remember, that was in the New York Times. The first attempt to use these missing nuclear weapons against Iran, we have reported previously, occurred in the Middle Eastern nation of Qatar. Russian Foreign Ministry spokesmen further report that the American war leaders were warned this past week by the British Prime Minister Gordon Brown and by Pope Benedict XVI, both of whom traveled to the U.S. this week, against the attempts by the U.S. to escalate their conflicts into another world war. As we have previously reported, this is a bad translation. This is out of Russian, okay? As we have previously reported, the United States believes it has no option other than total world war as their economy continues imploding, while at the same time fuel prices are rising to catastrophic levels and more food riots are being reported the world over, all of which, when combined, signal the collapse of the American empire on a scale not seen since the collapse of the former Soviet Union on June 12, 1990. And it goes on. this is at whatdoesitmean.com. 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 And it's the title, and it's dated 2 days ago. Or no, dated today. Nuclear-fueled explosion reported in U.S. Midwest. Whatdoesitmean.com. Now, when you add this story to the one that we're all more familiar with that accidentally was reported by the American media of the plane load of nuclear weapons a couple of months ago, remember that? And immediately all of us who have our tinfoil hats around put them on and said, well, this was an attempt that was stopped by the highest levels of the military command in this country, an attempt to... by renegade Air Force people, probably under the direct command and control of Dick Cheney, to launch a nuclear preemptive strike against Iran. So now we have this story. And the earthquake today, okay, there's a fault line there. I understand. You know, I said put on your tinfoil hat if you even want to hear this. But it certainly gives me pause because we live in a country that's run by people who lied us into a war that has taken the lives of hundreds of thousands of people. And as Phil Donahue, you know, Phil Donahue has this movie out, The Body of War, the documentary. And Donahue has said, we've all got to stop and say every day young men and women are being killed. Their bodies are being torn apart in an insane war that started with spin, which is a nice word for lies, and that continues with spin. Why are we just standing here? Why are we allowing this massive blunder to continue? Phil Donahue. And but when you consider that the Bush crime family, what it has done to this country, what it has done to law, international law, treaties. I mean, come on, folks. We really don't. We don't. For whatever reason, we do not focus on this. Part of the reason is because the media outlets where most Americans get most of their opinions, which is talk radio, is absolutely controlled by the Nazi right, by traitors like Limbaugh and Hannity and the rest of these people who truly, truly should be removed. And as a consequence of that, we've gotten to the point where we really don't know what's going on. When you couple that with a corporatist television medium whose sole function is to, you know, turn our heads this way or that way or make us forget, it is scary. It is scary to me. Like you, I'm sure, I always feel like I have a better chance of dealing with destiny if I know the facts. Whether it concerns my physical health or the health of the planet or the direction we are going in as a society or what my kid is getting on his or her report card. You understand what I mean? If you know the facts, it's easier to not just to accept or deal with what's being told to you, but also to work out a plan, if one is needed, to operate within that set of realities that you're being handed, right? We don't have that luxury. It's become a luxury. I always thought that was a necessity. That's just what you have to do. You have to know the truth. That's one of the reasons that I put, as a parent, and I'm sure you did too as a parent, or an aunt or an uncle, whatever, grandparents, you told your children, you have got to tell the truth. Whatever happens, we'll work through it. But you must tell me the truth. You must. And obviously, that like you, that's how I try to raise my kids. And there's a very good reason for that. As long as you're dealing with reality, like I said, it's a little bit easier to formulate, come up with a path or an idea or try to work a solution. But again, we don't have that luxury anymore. Everything that's told to us is a lie. We know this. That's one thing we do know to be true, and that is that everything that's told to us is a lie. Every single thing the Bush administration says, and these night crawlers that infest right-wing talk radio, everything they say is a lie. Everything is designed to either turn us against our own best interests or to tell us that there's nothing wrong. Go back to sleep. And again, I think the people who are doing this should be removed. And you can interpret that any way you want to. But they should be removed. They should be taken away from the national stage where they put this deception and these lies and this criminal, what results in criminal negligence to what we need to do out there for American consumption every single day. And seriously, God damn the sponsors that keep those people on the air. God damn them. I mean, really, just damn them to hell.
Primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Okay, so you know, that story about the possibility of a B-52 being shot down or some kind of an American airplane that may have been carrying nuclear bombs. Okay, it's 99.9% probability of being just absolute bat squeeze. Just total nonsense. Not 100%, but 99.9%. And the thing that's intriguing about me is that the rest of the world feels secure. It's not just this Russian website that reports this stuff. The rest of the world feels secure. Is that the right word? Or convinced that in reporting these stories, they are correctly betraying the United States of America to the rest of the world because of what we've done for the past 8 years. Well, longer than that, but you know what I'm saying. The past 7 or 8 years. Refusing to work with the rest of the world community about global warming. Refusing to work with the rest of the world about the pollution of natural resources, the converting of food, basic food, into biofuels in order to keep, our way of life from being subsumed in this lack of energy that is starting to occur. I mean, lack of energy producing resources that is starting to occur and become a very, you know, very noticed. But when I see a story like that, I just think to myself, you know, this is crazy, because the reports I've read say the U.S. Geological Survey, whatever it's called these days, reported noticeable seismological activity, aftershocks. And you don't get aftershocks, not, you know, for the next 4 or 5 hours after you shoot down an airplane. That's assuming that the reports of the seismological activity is true. This is what I was talking about the other night. How do we know what is really going on? And I realize there's a lot of stuff is just superfluous background noise that we probably don't need to know about, because it's just garbage. It's just head games that go back and forth between the psychopaths that run the country. Of course, there's always a chance that noise that goes back and forth between the psychopaths that run the country will result in the country being dissolved, or worse, because of the babbling going back and forth between the among the psychopaths around the country. You see what I'm saying? But all of this is going on, isn't it? While you and I are thinking about, whatever it is we're thinking about. You know, the Democratic primary, the difficulty it is in making ends meet right now, the fact that oil is, up to $116 a barrel. Now, that can't be. It's just going to keep going, isn't it? It's like house prices, real estate prices, 8, 9 years ago. It's just going to keep going up forever until there isn't any more. So, you know, we're kind of focused on that. We have to be, because that means food prices, everything's going up. George Bush has utterly and absolutely led the charge to destroy this economy, to destroy our military, to destroy our reputation, to destroy the rule of law. Talking with Larissa Alexandrovna. To destroy any kind of competition, political competition. Yikes! You know, is this stuff really happening? I really don't know. I don't know what angle Tom Hartman took on this story today. Maybe he, you know, poo-pooed it and said this is just an example of the craziness. Maybe he reported it as, here's a distinct possibility. I don't even know anymore. I don't know how, some of this stuff, I don't know how to talk about it. Or should it just be ignored? Like the story that Larissa was talking about. Here's a Mississippi Supreme Court justice who escaped prosecution, but a lawyer associated with him is sent to prison for absolutely nothing. Does that story impact people in Long Island or Seattle, or is that, as Dave Letterman says, is that real or is it not real? Well, it's real. And what's the ripple effect? What does that mean? As Larissa pointed out, if they will go to the lengths to get people like a governor or a Supreme Court justice, then what would they do to someone like you or me? And they, I don't think we have any problem anymore understanding or identifying who they are. Come on, this is not, now we're not into the tinfoil hat stuff. Now we're into the reality of the United States of America in 2008. You know where we are. You know what's going on. I take that back. We know where we are, but we don't know what's going on. Do we? Well, I digress. In the meantime, the Pentagon Institute, it is actually the National Defense University, which is a a Defense Department research center. It's run out of the National Institute for Strategic Studies. This is not neocon stuff. This is actual Defense Department organization. They have put out a report that's reported by McClatchy newspapers. The war in Iraq has become, quote, a major debacle, end quote, and the outcome, quote, is in doubt, end quote, despite what we're hearing from Iraq. The report raises doubts about Bush's projections of U.S. victory in Iraq a week after Bush announces he is suspending U.S. troop reductions in order to secure that victory. The report carries considerable weight, according to McClatchy newspapers, because it was written by Joseph Collins, a former senior Pentagon official, and was based in part on interviews with other senior defense and intelligence officials who played roles in the pre-war preparations. Do you understand that? I'll tell you a little bit more about this when we come back. All right, stick around. And we have the audio of Rachel Maddow kicking Joe Scarborough's ass up around his ears to the point that he took his dollies and marbles and went home. We'll have that for you, too. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's about 6 past the hour. There is just some wacky stuff going on in the Midwest. There really is. I'll just let the story go. I wanted to get it out there about the possibility of the shoot down of an American B-2 or B-6 bomber, stealth bomber, that might have been on its way to Qatar or someplace to get ready for an attack on Iran. You know, there's a heavy duty faction within the United States military, political, and defense establishment or offense establishment that really, really, really wants that war, for a number of reasons. Not the least of which is the fact that the U.S. economy we're in some trouble. Look, all right, I don't like it either. I would much rather just hang out and really wallow around in the denial. No, none of this stuff is happening. So whatever, you know, whatever rings your chimes, it's kind of a confluence of these little reports and events and little things, you know, just slightly off the national radar scope, just beep, 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 and you look over there and there's nothing, but it seemed like a shadow moved, and then beep, 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 you look over there. What was that? No, nothing. Just always something just in the, right at the edges of your peripheral vision, so to speak, and you turn your head, beep, it's gone. Huh? Make any sense? Well, I'll tell you what, if they're having problems in Iraq, apparently it can't be all this bad. This was in the New York Times yesterday. The Iraqi police are cracking down on people who are not driving around with their seatbelts on. Here it is. Look, here it is, Kathy. They're getting seatbelt scoff laws in Iraq. And there's some pictures here in the Times of Iraqi police issuing citations. The violators are fined 15,000 dinars, about $12.50. Brigadier General Zuhair Abada Mrawa said giving these tickets is part of the healing process of this country and of Baghdad to enforce the law by law. You know, some people are saying that there might be more pressing issues like the car bombs that turned the morning commute into a hail of red mist and body parts. Also, the killings and kidnappings and the political and sectarian infighting and the constant presence of the U.S. military and dead children and arms blown this way and that way. But so they're cracking down on people in Baghdad who don't have their seatbelts fastened. Jesus, God. Can you imagine an Iraqi cop, where, at a stoplight? I mean, they don't have a police force that's worth a tinker's dam right now. They have the established, or the beginnings, of a secret police force, not unlike what Saddam had, thanks to the U.S. military, or the U.S. occupational forces. We're helping them develop a secret police force, like we helped develop in Iran, after we overthrew that government back in the 50s, the Savak. I don't know what they're going to call this one, but this police force is the visible one, the one where the guys are wearing the white hats and the white shirts and have the badge, and they're stopping people and saying, is your seatbelt fastened? It isn't? Okay, here's the ticket. Okay.
Is there any special, I don't know, if you're a suicide bomber or if you're, you know, packing heat, do you get any extra ticket or...
I don't know.
Your car's exploding. If you have a separate charge.
If you have a trunk full of dynamite, I don't know. Anyway, right before the break, I was talking about this report published by the National Defense University's National Institute for Strategic Studies, the Defense Department Research Center. Report said that the United States has suffered serious political costs, with its standing in the world seriously diminished. Moreover, operations in Iraq have diverted manpower, a material, and the attention of decision-makers from all other efforts in the so-called war on terror. It has severely strained the U.S. armed forces. The report goes on, compounding all of these problems, our efforts in Iraq were designed to enhance U.S. national security, but they have become an incubator for terrorism. Huh? Hear that? Do you hear that? This is from the National Defense University. The efforts in Iraq by the United States military have turned that part of the world into an incubator for terrorism. And our efforts have emboldened Iran to expand its influence throughout the Middle East, the report continues. The report goes on to say, the outcome of this war is in doubt. Strong majorities of both Iraqis and Americans favor some sort of U.S. Withdrawal. For many analysts, Iraq remains a must-win situation, but for many others, it now looks like a can't-win. The report goes on to put much of the blame for what went wrong in Iraq after we overthrew Saddam on then-Defense Secretary Rumsfeld. The report says that in November 2001, before the war in Afghanistan was over, Bush asked Rumsfeld, quote, to begin planning in secret for potential military operations in Iraq, end quote. This is in the report. Rumsfeld, who was closely allied with Vice President Dick Cheney, bypassed the Joint Chiefs, the report says, and became, quote, the direct supervisor of the combatant commanders, end quote. The direct supervisor, that would mean that Rumsfeld became the de facto commander-in-chief. George Bush was not the decider. Now, is this an act of treason on the part of Donald Rumsfeld? Is this not a violation of the chain of command? How many military officers, flag rank, in the United States military understood what Rumsfeld was doing? Rumsfeld apparently took it upon himself to begin directing U.S. military operations and objectives and strategies. Rumsfeld. He was the one issuing the orders according to this report that comes out of the Pentagon. The report continues, quote, the aggressive hands-on Rumsfeld cajoled and pushed his way toward a small force in lightning-fast operation. Later, he shut down the military's computerized deployment system, questioning, delaying, or deleting units on the numerous deployment orders that came across his desk. The report also singles out the Bush administration's national security apparatus, and implicitly, President Bush and both of his national security advisors, Condoleezza Rice and Stephen Hadley, saying, the report says, quote, senior national security officials exhibited in many instances an imperious attitude, exerting power and pressure where diplomacy and bargaining might have had a better effect, end quote. This is coming from the United States Defense Establishment. Do you understand how close we might be to, oops, there goes the tinfoil hat again. The report ends by quoting Churchill, who said, quote, let us learn our lessons, never, never believe any war will be smooth and easy, or that anyone who embarks on the strange voyage can measure the tides and hurricanes he will encounter. Always remember, however sure you are, that you can easily win, that there would not be a war if the other man did not think that he also had a chance. End quote. That's how this report ends. But in the report, it states categorically, it is assessing blame onto the civilian leadership. I don't know if this is unprecedented. Maybe if you've had more experience in affairs military than I, and the interplay, the interaction between the civilian leadership and the military commanders who are instructed to carry out the policies, maybe you can send me an email and tell me, is this unique or is it not? Where a report is issued saying that the whole thing is a mess because of George Bush, Condoleezza Rice, Stephen Hadley, Dick Cheney, and Donald Rumsfeld. Is this not unique? I don't know. I have no idea. And to say, compounding all these problems, this report says, compounding all these problems, our efforts in Iraq were designed to enhance U.S. national security, but they have become an incubator for terrorism. Do you understand what they're saying? An incubator for terrorism, which is an absolute 180 from what Bush has been saying. This is what the anti-war people have been saying all along, that Bush created an area where international terrorism could be developed, fed, nourished, and turned loose on the rest of the world. And now the U.S. military is saying the same thing. Oh my. Well, isn't this interesting? This is for those Iraqi traffic cops. Okay. All right, here's something you need to know. Thanks to James in Seattle for sending this in. The four answers that every American should know. I'm going to give you the answers, but listen to the questions. James writes, Mike, today there are four questions the majority of Americans should know the answers to, but unfortunately the vast majority of Americans don't. All right, here we go. One, What should the minimum wage actually be? Two, what is the form of economy we have in America? Three, who counts the votes, especially in the national presidential elections? And four, what type of organization has been running America these past 8 years? Okay, here's the answers. To number one, what should the minimum wage actually be? The minimum wage should be at least $20 an hour. It was historically always tied to the level of American productivity, but George Herbert Walker Bush disconnected the two, artificially driving down the wage of the average American worker and almost everyone else, while simultaneously driving up the salaries and perks of the top executive levels. Number two, what is the form of economy we have in America? The answer, the American economy is currently, and has been for some time now, a socialist plutocracy. Socialism for the super rich and the rich, while the rest of us are on our own. Three, who counts the votes, especially in the national presidential elections? The answer, thanks to the privatization of the American election process over the preceding 8 years, the neocons own the four major voting machine companies, which will be counting the majority of the votes in the 2008 presidential election. These four companies are principally financed through the Pentagon, with the fifth company, Accenture, overseeing all the votes originating from overseas. You may remember Accenture from any number of questionable elections, the last national one occurring in Italy, where Berlusconi lost by only 25,000 votes, while the exit polls were suggested he should have lost by well over 1 million votes. He had hired Accenture to manage the Italian election. And, of course, we all know that Berlusconi is back in office. Number four, what type of organization has been running America these past 8 years? Answer, a criminal organization has been ruling over America for at least the last 8 years. Many still believe Bush and cronies to be nothing more than bumbling incompetents. But these so-called incompetents have managed to steal or permanently remove from the American treasury and economy somewhere in the vicinity of $5 to $25 trillion. What do you do with crimes of that magnitude? Thanks, James. What do you do with crimes of the magnitude that have been committed by Bush and his organization? What do you do? What do you do? I have no idea. I have no idea. And this is from Bob Alexander. This is in the MinnesotaMonitor.com. Minnesota Senator Norm Coleman is the Senate co-sponsor of a little-noticed domestic anti-terrorism bill that could carry us several steps closer to the good old days of the House Un-American Activities Committee and Joe McCarthy. It's called the Violent Radicalization and Homegrown Terrorism Prevention Act. It is currently in committee. After passing the House last year with no media scrutiny and no real debate, by a 404-6 margin. The primary sponsor of the Senate bill is fellow Republican Susan Collins of Maine. The purpose of the measure is to create a permanent federal commission to scrutinize radicals and would-be terrorists, and to fund a series of university-based centers devoted to ferreting out and tracking the dangerous subversives among us. The latter would operate under the auspices of the Department of Homeland Security. Those are the university-based centers. A handful of critics from the blogosphere and the legal world have called out the measure on the grounds that its vague mandate amounts to criminalizing dissent. But even in the civil liberties demimonde, it seems to be making little impact. One reason the bill has attracted so little attention, it's a thoroughly bipartisan push that actually originated in the Democratic Party. Though the Senate version is sponsored by two Republicans, the House version that passed last year was introduced by a Democrat, Jane Harman of California, and 10 of her 14 co-sponsors also were Democrats.
To snuggle up with your favorite screamer, more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm just getting real nervous. The Guardian of the UK kind of previewed this story last night late. Now it's out in the Saturday edition. With, of course, it's, 4:30 in the morning in the UK. General Richard Myers, America's most senior general, was, in his words, hoodwinked by top Bush administration officials determined to push through the torture techniques of people held at Guantanamo, leading, it says here, to the U.S. military abandoning its age-old ban on the cruel and inhumane treatment of prisoners. That's according to the Guardian of the UK. General Richard Myers, chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs from 2001 to 2005, wrongly believed that inmates at Guantanamo and other prisons were protected by the Geneva Conventions and from abuse tantamount to torture. The way he was duped by senior officials in Washington, who believed the Geneva Convention and other traditional safeguards were out of date, is disclosed in a devastating account of their role, extracts of which appear in today's Guardian. In his new book, Torture Team, Philip Sands, professor of law, University College London, reveals that, among other things, senior Bush administration figures pushed through previously outlawed measures with the aid of inexperienced military officials at Guantanamo. Myers, General Myers, believes he was a victim of intrigue by top lawyers at the Department of Justice, the Office of Vice President Dick Cheney, and at Donald Rumsfeld's Defense Department. The Guantanamo lawyers charged with devising these torture techniques were inspired by the exploits of Jack Bauer in the American TV series 24. General Myers wrongly believed interrogation techniques had been taken from the Army's field manual. The lawyers involved in this, all political appointees who pushed through the torture techniques, were Alberto Gonzalez, David Addington, and William Haynes. Also involved were Douglas Feith, Rumsfeld's Under Secretary for Policy, and Jay Bybee and John Yoo, two Assistant Attorneys General. It just goes on and on. So now, if we're to believe Myers, he was just totally out of the loop. He thought that whatever was being done, see, this is where the plausible deniability comes in. How can the top military official in the United States in uniform plead ignorance to what his people under his command are doing? Unless he's telling the truth. I mean, do you see what Bush has done? And do you understand now how totally and completely people like Limbaugh and Hannity are definable as American Nazis? Do you see that? I'm sure you do. Complete, total, fascists, both of these guys, and the whole clutch of right-wing talk show hosts who continue to pollute the country every single day. And the mediocrity of their minds. Hannity reminds me of what Hannah Arendt said about when she was covering the trial of Eichmann, and she referred to the banality of evil. This is Hannity, the banality of evil. This is Limbaugh, the banality of evil. Man, we're really there, aren't we? Yeah. Phone calls. We want to do some phone calls tonight? Let's do some phone calls tonight. Let's start with Alan, who is listening in Miami on WINZ. Hey, Alan.
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right. How you doing?
Well, you seem to be better than last night in some ways, but last night I thought you were really on to something, and your rage was righteous if nothing else. And I have to say that. I was trying to get through to you last night to say that.
It certainly came from the heart. You can be sure of that.
Well, the thing is that we all feel helpless,
right?
Because you know, if we had a real opposition party in this country, what they would be doing right now is not only informing us about all of these things that you are informing us about, they would be helping to organize a resistance to save our Constitution and our democracy.
Right.
The fact of the matter is that they're trying to. We've only the top of the surface here. They're planning to destroy eliminate the entire country and replace it with this North American Union kind of thing. They don't care what's happening to the dollar because they already have a new currency, this Amero that they're thinking about. And I don't know this for a fact, but I've certainly heard lots of things about. But the fact that it's even being considered and never ever once mentioned in those august halls of the Congress. I mean, and what about these train stations and depots that are being turned into detention centers all over the country with Kellogg Brown and Root? I mean, there's video footage of it available on the on the web.
Right.
Large areas that have locked doors and shackles. I mean, this is insane what's happening. If you could be sitting on another planet watching what's happening in the United States over these last 8 years or more, actually, what was the WTO NAFTA before it? Because as far as I'm concerned, the Iraq War is nothing but NAFTA by another name. Either you sign here on the dotted line or we have other means. And Saddam Hussein saw the other means.
Mm-hmm.
And so this has been going on. And not a word in our Congress about any of this stuff. And the only thing that they will raise their voice to say is, don't say anything about impeachment. Don't say anything about the war budget. Don't do this. Don't do that. They're telling the people who are concerned and really concerned to shut up.
Right, exactly.
So these people are enablers and collaborators in my book. And, you know, if you could get people, I mean, I hear you all the time. And what you represent is a sane view of things, a caring view of the world and your community and the people around you and how we can take care of one another. If we use the great wealth of the riches of the mind, of the human mind, these people are denying science, for God's
right.
sake, and for good reason. Because science and facts, which are based upon research, doesn't work in their favor. They claim that we are now in the affirmation age, that you just have to affirm stuff. This had another name during the time of the Third Reich, and that was like might makes right.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you have all the weapons, you can affirm whatever you want, especially it's a long time for them to get so much of that stuff together and control all of the media. But once they got stuff in place, they figure, okay, now we can do it. And 2000 was their attempt.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what happened in 2000 was the template for these thugs. It showed them that they could totally steal an election and could manipulate the American voter into any configuration that they wanted to manipulate us. I got to leave it there. Alan, thanks. I appreciate what you had to say. I just wonder how many people. I think back during the Clinton years when the right-wing nutballs in this country, I'm talking about, you know, the militia types. The Michigan militia was one that got a lot of attention. They were so convinced that Bill Clinton was going to come and I don't know, take their guns and anally rape them or something. I have no idea, but that's what they acted like. And, of course, the only time there's been a gun grab in this country has been under George Bush. But I remember thinking, after Katrina, I remember thinking back in the 90s, you know, these people are really out of their minds. And now, now that it's become clear what these right-wingers should have known a long time ago, not right-wingers, but these libertarian conservatives, whatever the hell they call themselves, defenders of the Constitution, all this other stuff, which I doubt. I think they're a bunch of racist jackasses. But all of a sudden, now I understand that feeling. And I have to think that my reaction to the Bush crime family is a hell of a lot more valid than the militia reaction back in the 90s to Clinton and Gore. I mean, what the hell were Clinton and Gore trying to do? Well, there's an answer to that, and we probably don't have time to go into it tonight, but you know my feeling about what Bill Clinton did. But all of a sudden now, I'm checking the catalogs for to increase my personal weaponry. Yeah, it's unbelievable. I can't believe I'm doing this. I don't know why I'm doing it because it's bull feathers, and you know it and I know it. If there comes a time in this country where they, the power, whatever, decides, okay, it's time for every American to turn in his guns or her guns, you know damn good and well that's going to happen. I mean, what? Am I going to stand in front of my house with my family behind me? Of course, in my case, it wouldn't be me standing there. It'd be Kathy out there, too, because she knows how to use a weapon now. But what are we going to do? Stand out here and take on a squad of U.S. Marines who have been told to go down this particular street and go get these people? I mean, it's madness. It's just madness.
Pissed us off, so we voted for Republicans. A form of suicide. Republican side.
Ready for Radical Talk Radio? Make mine Mike Malloy on Nova M.
It's about 10 before the hour. Where were we? I just went totally blank. What were we talking about, Kathy?
I don't know. I stopped listening.
You stopped listening. Yeah, all right. Well, I think we were doing... Oh, that's right. We were talking with Alan, who was listening to WINZ. Long About Friday is usually when I start to completely lose it. And I don't know. If you get enough bronchitis, do your brain cells start to get fried?
What? Did you say something?
Okay, never mind. All right, back to your phone calls. Stan is calling from Houston, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Stan.
Hello.
Hi.
I am, I'm very interested in what you're saying, because I've been having a knot in my stomach for a while. I think that, I'm kind of afraid that there's a plan to do away with the next election.
Yeah, a lot of people agree with you.
And I think the whole thing, all this little nitpicking and everything that the press is doing, not on Hillary, not on Obama, on both of them, is just so that people will lose faith in the electoral process. In other words, I mean, JFK ran against Lyndon Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
They went all the way to the how many ballots do they have at the convention?
Well, you got me on that one, Stan.
I don't remember how many it was.
Right.
The only way they were able to solve it was in the back room, smoke-filled back room, and it came out that, okay, JFK is going to be presidential nominee, and Lyndon Baines Johnson will be vice president.
Uh-huh.
And then they went ahead and they were united. They beat Nixon. Now, they're not letting that happen. They're making, you know, things are making it worse. Obama and Hillary can't team up. It just won't work because their people have been alienated from each other.
All right, what do you think's going to happen, Stan? Put a bottom line on it for me here.
Well, the bottom line is, I think that you've been calling the Bush crime family, I think Cheney crime family, because Cheney is Bush's superior in skull and bones.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Say that again about Cheney and skull and bones?
Skull and bones from Yale University.
Yeah, that was Bush.
Cheney was his superior. Cheney was the upperclassman.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Bush owes his allegiance to Cheney.
Uh-huh.
That's what Skull and Bones is all about.
I see.
And I think they're working to go away with the election. That's why I'm so scared.
Well, I you know, like I said, Stan, a lot of people agree with you on that, that there is a chance that this election is not going to happen. There was a point where I thought that was going to be the case, too. And now, you know, now I don't know. I just don't see how that would occur unless the learned helplessness that we, the American people, have absorbed is so powerful that if the election was canceled, we would just acquiesce, sit back and say, oh, okay, because there would be a reason for it, of course. The reason for canceling the election is coming up this November. And the reason would be some act of terrorism committed here in the United States. Now, the laws are on the books to do anything, or the directives, the presidential directives are in place to do anything, and it'll be legal. And again, keep in mind that the Bush crime family needs very little to make things legal. All they need is some punk-ass associate like John Yoo or Alberto Gonzalez to write them and source it, of course, a very dense legal opinion as to why torture is acceptable and strictly the province of the President of the United States acting in his power as the unitary executive, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. All this garbage that has come out that these sons of bitches have done to alter and destroy our Constitution. I am still astonished that John Yoo is, I guess he's a tenured professor at University of California, Berkeley. I can't believe that. I can't believe that John Yoo is drawing a paycheck from a public university in California. One noted, at least, you know, over the course of its history, as being a liberal, science-based institution. And John Yoo now is in a position where he is a full professor at UC Berkeley. I don't understand that. Why has he not been, you know, run off campus? Or better yet, why have the students out there refused to sign up for any of his classes and make it absolutely clear that his presence on campus is not something that will be tolerated by people who still think this country has a chance? That's another one of those issues I just can't get through my head. Why has not the Democratic congressional delegation, whether it's, you know, the senators and the House members, why have they not petitioned the Board of Regents for the state of California to remove this son of a bitch? This John Yoo is a man who has turned this country into a torture state and made it legal. I think the American Bar, I don't know, have not legal organizations come out with statements saying that this man is a disgrace to the law profession? Or is this just another instance of, oh, well, you know, what are you going to do? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. My name is Mike Malloy. And, yeah, as far as Cheney and being a member of the Skull and Bone Society, like our, I think our last caller said, there's no real proof of that. There's no real proof against it either, I guess. Cheney did go to Yale, but he flunked out. I don't know. I got a couple of emails from people right away that said, that, you know, he was not in Skull and Bones. Cheney wasn't. And I, you know, okay. I don't know about that whole thing. That's kind of like the mace, the Masonic thing. You know, I don't know. Is there some plot with Skull and Bones people to take over the world? I don't know. Kerry was in that club, right? As far as the Masonic temples, what's always intrigued me is no matter how big or small the city or the town, you can always find the Masonic Lodge. Of course, you can always find the place where the Lions Club meets, too, right? So, you know. You know what I'm starting to think? I'm starting to think that because things have become so insane politically in this country, and there isn't a whole lot, apparently, left to be done, unless people do decide to change it in the Jeffersonian way, that maybe it would be a good idea to switch this program to something like what Art Bell used to do. Remember that? You remember Art Bell? Fascinating program. Kathy used to pick me up at 1 o'clock in the morning in Chicago when I get off the air, and on our drive out Lakeshore Boulevard, trying to get up to Rogers Park at that hour of the night, we would listen to Art Bell. I guess it would be his first hour. Yeah, he came on right after me on WLS. And I used to think at the time, damn, you know, this stuff is really fascinating. The Face on Mars and all those guests he had. He had a whole stable of guests who did everything from, what was it called? What was that stuff where you could look at viewing?
Astral projection.
No, the viewing stuff.
Remote
viewing, right.
What were the little invisible curly things that he was always talking about that existed in the ether that you couldn't see, but they were always present?
I don't know.
You know what I'm talking about? And you know, then there was all the contrail stuff.
Well, that's...
You know, he was convinced that...
Well, so are half the people that email me.
Yeah. Well, what were those little... they were called coots or kinks, quirks, or, you know, the little invisible things that floated around you like little corkscrews in the air that somehow, you know, right, directed your psychic energy.
What are you saying?
I'm going to have to Google it, darn
it. Are you saying we should do this sort of a program?
Oh, God, no.
You wouldn't like to do that?
Have
guests on that would talk about rips in the time-space continuum. And I mean, look.
Spooks and quirks.
No,
little bops.
Look what's going to happen at I'm going to get the name wrong, but the nuclear accelerator, I think it's in Switzerland, where they are planning a collider. Now, a couple of you know a lot about this. I wish Marianne would call in, our nuclear physicist from the Chicago area, because she knows about this. They're planning on trying to create a reality or a singularity, whatever you want to call it, that occurred 1/16 trillionth of a second after the Big Bang, at the beginning of creation of time and space. And they're going to do it by bombarding atoms, a nuclei, I guess, with you know, again, I'm not sure, but the unexpected result may be, there are some physicists who are saying, look, unless there is a real solid reason for doing this, don't do it, because it may, in the process of doing this, if you succeed, you may create a series of minuscule black holes that begin to devour the planet. And of course, if that were to occur, it would be, I mean, we wouldn't even be aware. I mean, 1 second we're here, the next, you know, I mean, it just would be like turning a channel, I guess. And that reminded me of that Stephen King story about the, what was that called, where they were eating everything, eating up time and space?
I think it was the Tommyknockers.
Tommyknockers,
for God's
yeah.
sake, does this sound like a good idea to anybody?
No,
I know.
I don't think so.
Let's smash some stuff together and, I don't know, maybe we'll create a black hole. What in the world would possess any moron to even consider this is just beyond me. I'll tell you what, if I don't believe in God, I don't believe in quirks or cuckoos or num-nums or whatever the hell these things were that Art Bell was fascinated with.
Yeah, but we're talking...
Every night Art Bell was just fascinated.
But we're talking quantum physics here, or not even quantum physics, we're talking physics here.
Well, that doesn't mean, you know, Chris Rock, again, he's turning out to be one of my favorite modern-day philosophers, Chris Rock. Just because a thing can be done does not mean it should be done.
Right.
You can do things that maybe you should not be doing. And one of them is, I don't know, gee, let's see if we can make a black hole. Maybe we can.
And four or five of them, little pinpoint.
Little cute black holes.
Yeah, little tiny black holes.
It sounds adorable.
Little pinpoints that in a nanosecond or less just eats everything. Boom.
Oh, yeah, let's see if we can do that. Can we do that, please? After we get a puppy for Molly, can we see if we can make little mini black holes pop up and, you know, maybe Art Bell come out with his nunads or cuckoos or whatever. I'm going to have to Google it. You don't remember this? Night after night, he became obsessed with them.
Kathy.
Little invisible thing.
Kathy, you need to turn off your microphone now.
Well, I hope we've had enough of this little experiment.
Kathy, you need...
Take a poll of your audience. Hey, folks, truth seekers, do you want Mike to start doing Art Bell? We have Alex Jones for that.
All right, back to your phone call. Steve is calling from Glendale, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Mike, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, the people who thought that Atom Collider was a good idea were the construction companies that built them, if you wanted to think about it.
Yeah, that makes sense, doesn't it?
You know, that's who profits from this. The scientists, they're bought and sold with the grant money and all that, so it's one of those things. A couple points. When we talk about the B-52 bomber, going down somewhere in the Midwest, maybe.
Uh-huh.
Maybe. And, yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of people right now going to the Midwest, people who do documentaries and all that,
mm-hmm.
are going to maybe find out some answers, and it'll be posted on the Internet. And I can't imagine where something like that can happen where people aren't going to see smoke and all that. I don't really
well,
know
there's,
about
there,
the terrain.
There's a video up at YouTube already about some, you know, crazy lights that look like flares. In around Kokomo, Indiana, which is not far from the, I guess, from the epicenter of this 5.2 or 5.4 earthquake that apparently hit that part of the of North America last night. But
it's not unbelievable. It's not an unbelievable right. thing. If the idea of a rogue agency in our government being against each other itself is not entirely new. That have you ever seen a YouTube video of Dan Rather talking about the George Washington Bridge incident on 9/11?
I don't think I have.
It's on YouTube. If you Google George Washington Bridge, you'll see stuff come up. And Dan Rather gives a report that there was a truck stopped full of explosives on the George Washington Bridge. Doesn't specify whether or not they were Arabs or not.
Right.
And of course, that disappeared in the news.
Yeah.
Disappeared. You know, it went away conveniently.
Well, you know, I honestly believe that any government that would lie a society, lie a nation into a murderous war and occupation like Bush lied us into is capable of doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
Anything. Mm-hmm. Anything. So.
The whole idea of these, another thing that's not old is that the idea of these secret jails being built around rail yards in the Midwest.
All right, well, you're starting to break up, Steve.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. That's all right. You're starting to break. I have to go anyway. But anyway, thanks. We were catching towards the end there about every other word. But, you know, cell phone technology, besides we're being invaded by little tiny Cretos or something that are floating through the atmosphere. The name of the Stephen King was The Langoliers. The Langoliers. And thanks to Jack for that. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Rods. It was Rods.
Tell me what you say. If you could talk to me, what news would you bring? Of voices in the sky.
All right, they were called Rads, Rods. I got several emails here from people who apparently were Art Bell fans.
And apparently they were blurry little insects of some kind. But, you know, I was just thinking during the break that our colors are colorful enough. We really don't need the ones that believe in Bigfoot and are live in terror that aliens are going to shove something up their nose. I can't say it.
You were not a big Art Bell fan.
You know, I used to love The X-Files, but I knew it was fiction. I still don't believe in aliens. Any kind of spooks, specters.
Well, now, wait a second.
You
honestly believe
ether.
That the only sentient life in the universe is us?
I don't know, but I really don't want to listen to somebody postulate about it for 7 hours, 8 hours, 9 hours a night. How long was that show? It went on from what, 11 p.m. till 6 in the morning?
No, they came on right after, on WLS, right after me, but I think they didn't take the first hour. So I think it was midnight to 5 a.m., 5 hours a night until Art Bell went insane. Obviously, he did. He went totally mad, didn't
well,
he?
Well, wouldn't you?
Well, of course.
I'm doubting his sanity to begin with. But seriously, I mean, the Bigfoot.
You ever spent any nights on the desert?
No, and he did.
I have.
Show
it is so spooky
in some little tiny trailer out
right.
behind his house. I mean, what's up with that? I mean, he put himself in a little 4x4 cell and started talking about invisible insects that are floating around in chemtrails. And like I said, he got the callers, the people who were afraid the aliens were going to come and
jam something
up their nose.
Let me ask you something. Why don't you have on your flag lapel pin tonight?
You know, I can't find one that's made in America.
Back to your phone calls. Ray is calling from Scottsdale, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Hey, Ray.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good, good. This is an honor. I had a point to make about the topic you were going over at the bottom of last hour.
Uh-huh.
The criminalization of dissent.
Right.
And before I talk about that, I just wanted to say that you turned me on to progressive radio, and I was listening to one of your best of programs years ago,
uh-huh.
and you scared the hell out of me. I had to listen to the rest of the program with my earphones because I didn't know who all was listening, but you brought me back to reality.
Well, good. I guess.
But, you know, what I wanted to say about the, you know, this movement to, you know, criminalize dissent in any opposition in this country, I can't see it reversing anytime soon. You know, even after this election, it doesn't matter if Hillary or Barack ends up in the White House, because the core problem is that you still have a Congress that's being run by Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. And as long as you have these blue dog Democrats, and they're only Democrats, you know, in name only, we really don't have a progressive Congress that's going to stop anything.
Well, maybe at that point, if there's still a system worth saving, maybe at that point is when we should start finding candidates who are progressives, who are liberals, and work to get them elected into the House and the Senate. If you, in this country, if you control the legislative branch, I realize there are checks and balances here, but the legislative branch is where all the power is. So if you control that branch, you know, you can stop the appointment of to the federal judiciary of any more Nazis. You can hamstring the executive branch by overriding vetoes.
I agree with that 100%. And that's why I'm so, you know, disgusted when you listen to, you know, progressive radio, and all you hear all day long is this heated, passionate hatred against Barack and against Hillary, like they're the Sharks and the Jets in West Side Story.
Really?
Why not channel that energy into drawing up a list of seats that we can take over to support a real, you know, progressive or liberal agenda?
Mm-hmm.
Because the passion is there, the energy is there, it's just being misdirected. And that's my biggest problem. Could you imagine if we had a Congress where, instead of Pelosi, you had Maxine Waters, where you had, instead of Hoyer, you had, you know, a Kucinich. And if you got rid of, you know, a Reid and replaced him with Russ Feingold to run the Senate, then you could see some movement. Otherwise, you know, I think this fascism that's taking root is only going to grow stronger and stronger.
I think you're right, Ray. I think you're right. Listen, man, I got to leave it there. Thanks a lot.
Hey, thank you.
All right, I appreciate you checking in. All right, break here. When we come back, Rachel Maddow hands Joe Scarborough his ass, and Scarborough is so upset about yet another female handing him his ass that he gets up and walks off the set. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Why can't I act like a man? Why can't I be good and do what other men can? Why can't I be good in something of this life? If I can't be a god, let me be more than a wife. Why can't I be good? Why can't I be good? Why can't I be good? Why can't
go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. Okay, Rachel Maddow. I've said before, I don't have any friends in the radio business. I don't have any intimate friends because, you know, Peter Werby's a friend. Rachel is certainly a friend. Sam Cedar's certainly a friend. Randy Rhodes is certainly a friend. We just don't, you know, very seldom see each other. But I met Rachel's parents out in Seattle. First time we went out there for an Air America gig. And I like her, and I like her whole family. They're just good people. And, Rachel, of course, has been groomed by MSNBC to now become an MSNBC political consultant, and she still operates, still has a program on that scummy, filthy, lying, cheating Air America. But she was on the other night on a program on MSNBC hosted by David Gregory. And Joe Scarborough, the former Republican congressman from the Florida Panhandle, who now has his own program, Morning Joe. You know, Scarborough, first of all, has a problem with uppity women. Uppity women are women who are demonstrably smarter than he, such as Mika Brzezinski in the morning on the Morning Joe program that Scarborough took over after Imus was fired. Think back to the day before the attack on this country on September 11, 2001, what we were all talking about that summer, not you and me, but what would the media, the filthy, corrupt media was talking about was the Gary Condit case with the intern that had disappeared, and all the speculation as to what happened, how involved they were, yada, yada, yada. And it got so bad that Condit, what did he do? Did he finally resign, or he just didn't want to run for re-election, and he's kind of disappeared? It was horrible. As it turned out, of course, Condit had nothing to do with it. Meanwhile, Joe Scarborough has in his Florida congressional office the death of an intern or a woman, a young woman, who was working there. I don't know if she was a volunteer or not. It seems so long ago. And, of course, media left that one completely alone, an actual death under very strange circumstances. I think her name was Lori Klosaitis. And Chandra Levy was the one that Gary Condit was. Now, Condit was a Democrat, and, of course, Scarborough is a right-wing neo-Nazi. It appeared that Scarborough had cleaned up his act a little bit in terms of his extreme right-wingism, but not so. He just subsumed it for a while, stuck it down, tamped it down. I think I've used that word twice tonight. That's awful. Tamped it down. Got it out of the way, and every once in a while it comes boiling out. And the way it comes boiling out of Scarborough is he hates women in general, but he hates women who are smarter than he is, which would probably include just about practically everybody who works at MSNBC. And I realize there's some airheads there, but it doesn't make any difference. Scarborough is Scarborough. He's really a dumbass, just a complete dumb man. He really is. Rachel Maddow, on the other hand, like her or don't like her, she is very well versed in the political stuff, quick on her feet, and made mincemeat out of Scarborough. In this clip we're going to play for you, Scarborough tries to do to Rachel what he does to Mika Brzezinski every morning: overtalk her, interrupt her, shout her down, treat her like she's a non-being. He very seldom looks at her. This guy is a real misogynistic little jackass, frankly. So I want you to listen to this. The panel was discussing the effect of Senator Obama's personal and professional relationships on his campaign when Rachel and Scarborough disagree. Now, Scarborough started to challenge Rachel's argument that relationships only become an issue when a political opponent makes them an issue. And then she said, "Let me make my point." She had started talking, and he just started talking over her. And she said, "Let me make my point, then you can dismiss me." You got to love Rachel. She then finished with an example of McCain campaign co-chair in Florida's bathroom activities. After a commercial break, Joe prefaced his rebuttal to Rachel by saying, "I don't engage in crossfire-type debates, and I certainly don't want to talk about what people do in bathrooms." What he was really saying is, you just kicked my ass, Rachel, and I can't stand that. And so instead of doing what I do with Mika Brzezinski and shout you down, I'm just going to take my dollies and marbles and go home. So he finishes this little diatribe after David Gregory ends the this little bitch fest between Joe and Rachel. And then John Harrell comes on camera. And then viewers can hear Joe taking off his microphone. And when the panel picture comes back on the screen, no Joe. CNBC's John Harwood was there, Air America's Rachel Maddow, former Tennessee Congressman Harold Ford Jr., and, of course, this little snot Joe Scarborough. And this is so typical of these right-wing punks. It really is. Once they're put in their place, they're so nonplussed, so pissed off, so unable to handle it, that they take off their microphones and walk away. So there's the setup. Here you go.
Associate And friendships become an issue when the political opponents decide to make them an issue. And so we talked about this before on this show. I mean, the
Rachel,
Jeremiah Wright.
Let me make my point,
and then you can dismiss me. Let me make my point first. The Jeremiah Wright, as a pastor for Barack Obama, is an issue. The political associations that John McCain has made with other with right-wing pastors have not been an issue. The issue of, that has been made about who's given money to Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton because their opponents have decided to go after them on that. But, for example, John McCain had this incredibly controversial relationship with his Florida campaign co-chair, who was caught in a bathroom offering money to a police officer to do something that we can all imagine in a bathroom. Nobody's going to John McCain about that and saying, he was your Florida campaign co-chair? What do you think about men doing that in bathrooms? What do you think about entrapment from police officers? What do you think about public sex?
That's what the general election is for.
Nobody brought that stuff, but nobody's brought that stuff up to John McCain at this point, and it's a decision made by political opponents. It's not something that happens organically because of how long you've been around the block.
All right, let me get a break in here before I run out of space. Rachel, Harold, John, and Joe still with us. Joe, what are you seeing tonight?
Well, I think I may blow all my time on the prediction to respond to Rachel. I don't engage in crossfire-type debates, and certainly I don't want to talk about what people do in bathrooms. I do want to say, though, that anybody, and you can ask Harold Ford, you can ask anybody that's ever run for political office, that the thing you want to do is define your opponent. You define opponents that people don't know more easily than defining opponents that have been in public service for a quarter of a century. It was the only point I was trying to make. And again, I don't do crossfire, so if we want to yell back and forth, then Rachel will have to find somebody else to do that.
I wasn't trying to yell back and forth to you. I was starting to make my point. You cut me off before I started my first sentence. That's all. I was. Okay. You waited for me to start. I started and then you jumped in.
Well, I don't mean to be condescending, but I can say that anybody that's ever run for political office before knows that there's a big difference between John McCain and defining him, who's been in public service for 25 years, and defining Barack Obama, who was in Washington, D.C. for 1 year before he decided to run for president.
All right, I'm going to shut this particular debate down and move on. John, your thought about what's coming up ahead.
After Tuesday, Hillary Clinton's right back in the fight of her life. What she's probably done with Bittergate and with that debate is preserve her lead in Pennsylvania. She's got a working margin there. She's likely to win next Tuesday. But then she's got those May 6th contests in North Carolina. Likely to lose there. She's got to win in Indiana.
There he goes.
Very close race right now. No more than even money bet for her to win that state.
And, of course, Rachel laughs there at the end because she can see the screen, the full screen, when they come back. And little pissy-ass Joe Scarborough has taken his dollies and marbles and gone home because Rachel had the absolute temerity to tell him not to interrupt her. I've said before, I watch the interplay between this right-wing punk and Mika Brzezinski every morning, most mornings on Morning Joe, because simply I cannot stand CNN in the morning. I cannot do the John Roberts and that little fluff piece from Fox News. And I'm sorry if that sounds misogynist. Sorry. I don't know her name, and I don't care. But trying to watch CNN in the morning after Molly has come in and said, "Daddy, get up!" Can't do it. So I switched to Morning Joe just to see, who the guests are going to be, what they're going to talk about. But invariably, Joe Scarborough treats Mika Brzezinski as any sexist pig right-wing bastard would treat any woman. And, of course, Brzezinski is so much smarter, as Rachel is, than Scarborough. So we just thought we'd play it for you. In my opinion, I think Rachel, way to go, Rachel. I love it. Just keep ramming him with anything that's within reach because he is such a right-wing snot. He really is, Scarborough. He's just an absolute arrogant snot. And that's why he's on television. There's no other reason. Just like when they gave John Kasich, former member of Congress from Ohio, a program on Fox.
Well, it could have been worse. He could have killed her.
Yeah, he could have killed her. That's right. Or had her killed. That's right. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Gun in your hand.
gonna mess around with another man.
About 10 before the hour. Well, we certainly just absolutely gutted the program tonight, didn't we? Anyway, thanks for the assistance all week in putting this sucker back on the tracks. Ian Huff, who engineers, answers your calls, and co-produces the program. Billy Foster, our technical director. Ben Birch is the podcast manager for Nova M. Chris in Minnesota is our senior correspondent. Bob Alexander, our resident philosopher. Bridget Wolfe is our writer in residence. And Catherine Bay, our executive producer. Have you become a Nova M founding member yet? Please consider to do that. This is, it's important stuff. It really is. Go to NovaMradio.com when you have a chance and check out becoming a Nova M founding member. It'll cost you $10 a month. And it's not a donation. It is, a fee for things that come back to you from the Nova M Radio Network. And I think, frankly, I think it's worth it. But that's just me talking. Check it out, okay? NovaMradio.com, how to become a founding member, and take a look at what is available. And also, I got a picture from Kurt, sent me an email, a photo, I should say. Kurt emails a lot to the program, and he had on one of the Malloy shirts. That's strange. I don't mean Kurt was strange, although that's what I mean is strange is to see somebody walking around in a shirt that has your name on it and a picture of half your face. It's like, they're going to have some Randy stuff in there pretty soon, too, I understand. I want to get one of those T-shirts and wear it, like, go to the farmer's market here or go to a grocery store and see if anybody says,
that's you on the shirt.
That's you on the shirt.
That's you in the spotlight. Losing your religion.
My religion. Dion is calling from Brooklyn, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Dion.
Hey, how you doing tonight, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
I just wanted to tell you that thing that you guys were talking about earlier, that was string theory, I believe.
No, I wish it were string theory. I have a kind of a little basic a layperson understanding of string theory. He was talking about little invisible creatures that came here from another dimension. Trust me, Dion. You're talking science. Art Bell was talking... Art Bell was talking weirdness, all right?
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah.
All right.
Something totally different.
But right.
I was going to say something about the guns. You were talking about, you know, Americans might be at risk of losing their guns. I was going to say it's kind of ironic because all you guys who did obey the law, you know, you have the right to the Second Amendment and you purchase guns legally and register them. What about all the people out there with the illegal guns, like the Bloods and the Crips and the people from my borough of Brooklyn who have all these illegal guns?
Mm-hmm.
If you're confiscated, then think about it. The criminals would be the ones leading the revolution. It would be kind of ironic, wouldn't it?
Well, it would. Do you own a gun?
No, I don't own a gun. But, you know, everybody from my block, I mean, since I was growing up, man.
Sure.
Everybody I know owns a gun illegally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know some people that own legal one legal gun and three illegal ones. And the thing is, the guns that are usually illegal are the Desert Eagles, the SIGs, the AK-47s, the ones that do real heavy damage, you know, and the ones that are illegal are the shotguns and the handguns.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be ironic if legal law-abiding citizens would lose their guns, and they would have no way of knowing, you know, who owns all the illegal guns, but... it will be kind of funny.
Don't you wish we lived someplace where you and I would not be having this kind of a discussion?
Yeah. You mean like over in London, like in England, where, I mean, the police usually don't even have guns?
I just mean in any kind of a society where, you know, we're not sitting around talking about guns or the need to have them or the need to not have them or, you know, I hate this. This is one aspect of being a gun owner. And having a permit to carry that I hate. I just hate it.
Yeah.
And, you know, just dealing with it on any level. That's not me, you know.
Well, what you're talking about is a perfect world. Yeah. I think that's what you're talking about.
I guess so. And you know, I told the story before, Dion. You know, I was advised, flat out advised to get a permit to carry a weapon and to take the training and get recertified every 2 years because of what I was dealing with here in outside of Atlanta, Georgia, by taking on the radical right and a couple of racist organizations and a couple of these Christian Reconstruction movements, and the death threats just got to be so frequent and so serious. Atlanta Police Department started to consider them serious, and they just said,
wow,
you know, we can't tell you what to do, but we would suggest that you do this, and
wow,
you know, go get certified, learn how to handle a handgun so you're not shooting yourself in the foot or the head. Learn how to keep it safe. From at the time, I had a 8-year-old son, excuse me, who's now 29, but now I have a 3.5-year-old daughter. So, and you know, I just do it every 2 years, go get recertified. And I hate that. I hate it. I hate that that's the case. I hate it.
Yeah.
But
hey,
anyway,
one more thing. What Kathy said about, it was so shockingly ironic what she said about the, she can't find an American flag pin made in America.
Right. Isn't that the truth?
That's funny, man. I love you guys, man. Keep it up, man.
All right. All right. Thanks, Dion. Take care.
All right.
Take care,
bye.
Man. Take care. Take care. We out of time? Damn, we just got started. What are we doing this weekend? Oh, we have that festival at Molly's school, right?
I'm going to go looking for rods.
You're going to go looking for rods.
Take chemtrail samples.
Oh, my God.
Maybe I'll spot a Yeti.
Have a nice weekend, everybody. Please take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Oh, and have a great weekend. Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.